narrator of the tape is Parker B. Wagnold, who resides at RD2, Gettysburg, PA. Professor Wagnold was the chairman of the music department and the director of the Gettysburg College Choir. Professor Wagnold retired from Gettysburg staff last year at the age of 72. The interviewer is John Spohr, class of 1981. This is a project for my oral history class, and the date is January 25th, 1978. In a moment, the interview will begin. Okay, I'm here with Professor Wagnold, and I'm going to ask him a few questions for my oral history class. My first question is, when did you come to Gettysburg College?
I came to Gettysburg College in the fall of 1935. At that time, I was a student enrolled at the seminary and organized the seminary choir, and then was asked to organize a college choir. The college did not have a music department per se, and when we planned to make this organization, we just asked students to come for auditions. In the first year, we had something like 55 students in the choir. All of them, of course, were non-music majors.
Okay. What would you say that Gettysburg College has changed in order to become a better college?
Well, it has improved, I think, academically. Of course, it's much larger now. We must remember that in 1937, when I began as a teacher of Bible and a director of the college choir, we had about 700 students at the most. Now, it was a very friendly school at that time. Everybody greeted everybody on the campus. Everybody knew everybody. I knew about all the students that were on the campus. Then that changed radically. It changed with the Second World War. At that time, the men on the campus were taken off to war. And girls, of course, used the fraternity houses for their place to stay. The 55th Air Corps came in, and they occupied all the dormitories. At that time, the campus was running two courses, you might say, two departments. One was a teaching of the 55th Air Corps, and the other was the regular curriculum of college students. When the war was over, and a lot of these men came back, and they came back in large numbers, the campus then was larger in enrollment, and it lost its friendliness at that particular time. To the president of the college, Dr. Henry W. A. Hansen, was a very warm person, and so there was a lot of contact between the president and the students at that time, which in later years was lost.
Okay, I'd like to stop the tape now for a second. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit about the honor code right now, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
Would you, when you were here as a professor, was the honor code instituted?
The honor code was instituted about 1950, and of course I was here as a teacher from 1937 on. There was considerable amount of talk and discussion between students and teachers about the honor code. There was not a full agreement about the honor code, because a lot of the students said, well, the fraternity brothers would not inform on their fellow fraternity brother, and they felt that was a tremendous drawback. There were other problems, too, involving the Honor Code, because it had not been instituted, and it was a big question mark as to whether it would be a workable thing. Time, however, went on, and finally it was put into effect. I think that that some of the problems that we anticipated have taken place. But there was a good element in the matter of the Honor Code. Previous to the time it was instituted, I heard students constantly say, well, there's an awful lot of cheating in this class or that class under this professor or some other professor because a professor couldn't see or he didn't check up on the students. Well, when the Honor Code went in, and then students were to inform on each other, that whole thing stopped, because if they said, well, there was cheating there, then why wouldn't they have reported on it, you see? So that part of it, that element, stopped. The Honor Code, I believe, is a wonderful thing. In spite of its drawbacks and maybe the problems that are involved, I still think the Honor Code is a wonderful thing to have in any institution.
Do you remember any of the students being punished for violating the Honor Code? Do you remember any of the penalties?
Well, some of them were dismissed from school, and others were dismissed for, say, a semester, or they were penalized and had to have, say, 15 hours added to their college curriculum for graduation. Of course, we used the credit system then. I mean, the hour system had to have so many hours. I think it's 122 hours or something like that, 124 hours to graduate. And now we use courses, but at that time, just hours were added.
I see. Do you feel that it was successful when you were as a beginning professor?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'd like to change my questions now to fraternities.
Yeah.
Were you involved with fraternities in any way?
Not very much, no.
Were you an advisor?
No, I was asked to be, but I never accepted because my program that I had was too heavy to carry on any outside activities other than the ones I did have.
What would you say the students' feelings were toward fraternities?
Oh, it was very strong. It was very strong, and it was, I think, had some things in it that were valuable. Such as the student came and they felt a certain security. They had a place to go. They were at least taken within a group and they had friendship within that group. Now, there were many drawbacks to it, too, but I'm not going to discuss those at this time.
Okay. Do you remember any of the fads that the students went through?
Oh, yes, they had a lot of fads at that time, but I didn't pay too much attention to them. It's a funny thing, the girls' dresses were weighed down to their shoe tops, and then the time came when their dresses went up above their knees, and it went back nearly to their shoe tops again, and then it came back up high again, and now I think it's going back again, so you can see how long I've been here.
Yes, yes.
But not only that, but the type of activities that they took part in, and the dances they had and whatnot, they used to, all the men dressed in, when they had dances, they had men dressed in tuxedos and the girls in long dresses, and really they looked nice.
Okay. Do you remember any of the pranks that the seniors might have done? Any senior pranks?
Well, what they did have at that time was hazing for the fraternities,
oh,
and also freshmen.
Would you tell me about that?
Why, it was quite severe. Here they had to wear their dinks, and if somebody was smart or somebody got it in for a freshman, then they'd have these Friday afternoon or Friday evening sessions in which freshmen were brought up before the tribunal, and sometimes if it was quite severe, they took took a razor or a hair clipper and clipped all their hair off, and so that they were bald-headed. They did other things. They made them do all kinds of things, such as maybe they had to walk with crutches to the class, or they had to carry baskets or wear a woman's hat or some other crazy thing. It was always some inventive thing to more or less haze the student. And some of it was quite severe, and the college was criticized in many instances because of the severity.
I see. When you were teaching here, would you say the students were as wealthy then as they seem to be today?
No.
They weren't?
No.
Okay.
The affluent society came in, you might say, after the Second World War.
I see. Do you know of any policy that Gettysburg College may have stopped that it possibly shouldn't have that would have benefited it?
Well, that's too difficult a question, really, because one wouldn't know whether, for instance, if it was continued, whether it would have been so successful or not. We used to have compulsory chapel. I would be opposed to it, but it was a good thing at the time. Classes were, in attendance, was very compulsory. If a student cut so many times, why, he was brought before the dean, he could have any number of things done to him to more or less bring him back to the classroom. And there were a number of things like that that I'm not so sure were so terribly good because of the changing times.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. You mentioned earlier that you knew many of the students and that it was a very friendly place. How would you describe the faculty-student relationships?
Today?
No. When you were teaching?
When I was teaching. Well, at first it was very fine. It was fine in every way. Really, the rapport between faculty and students was excellent. But that, as I said, went out pretty much after the Second World War, when the student body became larger, and also the administration became so cold that the students just felt that there was a coldness that enveloped the campus. And I could point to the administration for at that time, I mean, in the last years anyway, for the much of the problem that was involved there.
You mentioned that you were choir director and that you were involved in teachings of the Bible. What other activities did you take place in?
Well, I was so busy doing that work that I didn't have much time for other activities. I was more or less asked to chaperone dances. I was asked to be advisor to various groups. I was asked to go along with groups on these overnight hikes or something like that at the college cabin. And those kind of activities I participated in, and I did this willingly because it was kind of fun too.
That's good. You mentioned earlier how after the Second World War, Gettysburg College seemed changed greatly. Would you expand on that?
In the first place, when the students returned after the war, these men who returned were mature. They were no longer the immature person. They had seen life in the raw. They had been under the firing line. They had seen their buddies killed. They had gone through a tremendous amount in a short period of time. And when they returned, here were students who were just freshmen, and who were they, 18, 19 years of age? And they had not had the experience, nor were they, for instance, as mature in their whole outlook on life. This meant pretty much a cleavage in the student body. And as a result, the older students who came back to finish college were quite influential. And so problems were often ones that just could not be resolved too easily.
I see. Would you tell me how the Depression affected Gettysburg? Now, I know you came toward the end of the Depression, but there still may have been some problems.
It was difficult to get students. The college was working under the handicap of not having enough students. Many of us teachers had to go out to the high schools to recruit students We'd go to their homes to more or less tell them about Gettysburg College, what we had to offer, the institution as a friendly one and as one that had a good academic record. And these things were things we just had to cope with. And the result was there wasn't much money, for instance, for activities. Even with the college choir, I had to run that on money that I received at concerts. There was no budget of any kind. We had no monies to buy anything with. It was a very difficult period of time.
What were some of the students' goals when they graduated college?
Well, we had many of their goals, I think, are just similar today. There were students who went into business, students who went into chemistry or to medicine and to whatnot. They had all these different professions they wanted to enter.
Now, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the music department. Could you tell me about the organization of the choir and the music department, which I understand you were a large, you participated a great amount in?
The college choir had to be the main organization to bring about a music department. It was the organization that had to give the background and the impetus to music on the campus. There were many felt that music just didn't belong on the campus. Some of the board of directors said, well, it just can't be done, it just doesn't work. Furthermore, didn't have any money and everything like that. But when the college choir went out on tours, the comments coming back from the churches and from the constituency of the college was, herein is an organization that is bringing the college to the communities and therefore is very worthwhile. First years went out, we didn't even have choir gowns, so we had to have the Women's League purchase choir gowns for the choir. There was no such thing as a music department. As I said, that didn't come until 1948. The college choir, after in the 50s, I think, gained a reputation for being a fairly good organization. And then, with the coming of the music department, we gathered in students who were musical, which also helped the organization. In 1963, the college was invited to sing at the Lutheran World Federation in Helsinki, Finland. And so the choir made that tour, and they sang in 10 other foreign countries and were very well received. Then in 1967, the college choir made a tour around the world and was received exceptionally well. We started out by going to Hawaii, from there to Japan, and we spent a whole week in Japan, sang to crowds of 3,000, feted by the mayors of the cities, had an unusually fine experience, went to Taiwan and was received very well there, next to Hong Kong, and sang in one of the largest churches there to a crowd of over 1,000 people. Then we went down to Bangkok, Thailand, and was sponsored by the music clubs of Bangkok, and had an unusually fine reception there. From there we went to India, and again our reception and was written up in papers all along the way as being a very fine organization. I might tell you, though, that the day we were to board the plane was that day that the Six-Day War broke out between Israel and Egypt. We had concerts scheduled in Egypt, in Jerusalem, and in Bayreuth, these places, which all had to be canceled because we didn't dare take students into that country, which was just more or less now war-torn. And that was a very unfortunate thing. But we did go then to Iran and to Turkey, and then spent considerable time in Greece, where we sang in any number of concerts and throughout the all of Greece. Then on to Rome, and then our last concert was in Vienna. And in all these places we were well received.
That's very good. Why would the students major in music at Gettysburg when there were other fine musical schools?
Because, for two reasons. One, in many instances they had some contacts with the school, either through parents who had graduated here or through ministers who had graduated from the college and therefore said, here, this is a very fine school, now they have a music department, and it would be well for you to attend here. Then, too, the choir drew a number of students, and the people and students wanted to come here to sing in this organization. Other organizations of the music department came into being. The band was growing, but it wasn't at that a very fine organization until in the 60s, late 60s. And the man who brought it to the foreground was Bob Zellner. Then, too, we had a chapel choir, which Dexter Weichel made into a very fine organization. And Nonnemaker with the orchestra. So that with the coming of our teachers, and we had good teachers, and the students learned to know that we had good teachers, and any number of them who didn't even plan to major in music came here who were musical and then switched majors and came into the music department.
Back in the 1930s and 40s, how often would you have concerts and where would you have those concerts?
We more or less mapped it out so that we had three areas. One, going as far south maybe as Charleston, South Carolina. And we had concerts all along the way. And the second area was going west, which would go out in through Pittsburgh, out into Ohio, and sometimes even up into Michigan. Then the third area was up to New York, of course through Pennsylvania, into the northern part of New York, and into Massachusetts, and coming down all the states down to New York, and usually singing a concert in New York City, either at Town Hall or some other important place like that.
What type of music did you sing?
All sacred.
All sacred?
Yes.
Were the college choir and the chapel choir the same?
No. They were always two separate organizations.
And which did you direct?
I directed the college choir.
The college choir.
That was the first organization. The other one came into being, oh, much later, because we didn't have the students who, you know, that number of students to form two organizations.
You mentioned compulsory chapel. Did the choir have anything to do with that?
Not a thing.
Okay. I was just wondering in that respect. Were you ever involved with the band?
Only in trying to get a good bandman to come to direct it, that's all, as chairman of the department.
How would you say the materials which you began with have changed compared to the materials you ended with?
Well, it was remarkable that even at the beginning I had fairly good material, but I was also in the position where I had not had too much experience, and I didn't know how to handle even the material I did have. However, as a whole, the material we have on the campus today is far superior to the material we had way back in the 30s and 40s, and even early 50s.
What type of music did the students listen to?
Oh, the students had more or less crossed the board. They had jazz, they had, they didn't have rock and roll, but they had, jazz was most popular, and also the big bands, such as, you know what some of the big bands were. There was, I can't remember some of these men now, but there were a lot of outstanding bands. Cab Calloway, who was a man that just passed away and died over. He was the one.
Guy Lombardo,
and, you know, a lot of those men.
Was there a lot of interest in the college choir?
Yes, very much.
You said 55 people. I'm not sure how to relate that.
Well, there was maybe, I had auditions, and maybe you had auditions of, say, 125 to 150 people who auditioned, and I chose that many students. I chose them for their musicianship and for their capabilities as singers and what I thought would make a good choir member. Tried to do the best I could. I made mistakes, but I did the best I could.
So that in the beginning years, the 1937, 1938 years, and up until you had a music department, the students did this just for pleasure.
That's right. It was an extracurricular activity, which in a sense it is now, even to this day. However, today, those who are music majors must belong to a musical organization.
How long did you do sacred music? Was that
always? That was always because, for this reason. It isn't that I didn't like secular music, but you must remember that when you take an organization of 55, 60, and later years 70 students off the campus, you have to provide the evening meal, the night's lodging, and the morning breakfast. And here, if we went to churches and we had to use sacred music there, then we received the evening meal, the night's lodging, and the morning breakfast, and also, say, a certain amount of money. And that way we could keep our organization solvent. If we had to go out and pay for all the things that were needed to have an organization that large, we couldn't have done it.
You said that you had to go out and raise money by singing in the beginning years because you didn't have any...
No budget.
And was that a successful maneuver?
Well, I managed to keep solvent, and that's all I can say.
Okay. What was your favorite artist? Vocal or...
Oh. Lawrence Tibbett.
Lawrence Tibbett.
Yes. Also John Charles Thomas. And as choirs are concerned, of course, the main choir then, where I got my training, was a synod choir, which was world-renowned. It was known throughout the world as a superior choral organization. And there were few organizations like it at the time, and therefore it stood out as superior. And that's where I had my training. And it was in that atmosphere and in that kind of a program that I was much interested in. And that's why I like to, I mean, I wanted to form another organization because I just wanted to direct.
Were you ever involved with the Owl and the Nightingale?
No.
No, okay. Now, where was the music department located in the 1930s, 1940s?
Well, it was located in... for what it was. We just didn't have anything. We had no building. We had no place. We used a room up in Wydensall Hall. It was at that time called the Student Christian Association building because that was a center of the student Christian activities. We didn't have a chapel. The music department did not come into being until really, and have a building of its own, until the chapel, new chapel was built, and that was in 1951. But we started the music department previous to that time, but used the Wydensall Hall and the chapel and places like that.
Were any of your students become well-known or famous in the musical world?
Well, that's difficult to say. It's not time, you might say. There are... for them. We have had some who've gone out who've done remarkably well in voice. Also some of them who have done tremendous work in as choral directors. We have we had one student that I trained who's a tenor who auditioned for the Met and went to way up. He was selected by the committee to be, I think, in the finals. He didn't go to the finals because he was in the army and chose to stay in the army.
I see. What type of role did the choir play on campus? Because you mentioned that, you know, that you went out on the trips and the tours, and I'm sure that took a lot away from the students' studying time and maybe their social life even.
Not as much as athletics.
I see.
We rehearsed at 4 o'clock from 4 to 5 when the students didn't do anything else anyway. That was a dead hour. And you must remember back in the early part of the 30s and the 40s and up in through the 50s, we didn't have many activities on the campus. The activities were few. They now, you have many more activities on the campus. One thing that has happened on our campus, which I think is regrettable, and that is that the Gettysburgian was once a powerhouse on the campus. It was a newspaper that where students of real quality, real capability, performed on the paper. And it's just gone down till now. It's not even given much consideration anymore. But it was one that had won any number of awards among collegiate circles and things like that. Well, I think it's regrettable that the paper has deteriorated as much as it has.
Yes. Okay, I'd like to go on to just another section now. Could you tell me some famous people that have come to the Gettysburg campus? You know,
in the past years?
Yes, and, you know, primarily the 1930s, 40s.
Oh, my.
Years, but possibly other people have come that maybe you knew or met or talked with, someone famous, important.
Well, Carl Sandburg, Lloyd Douglas, we've had so many famous people. I know. We've had most of the presidents that have come into the campus, too.
Which presidents have been on the campus?
Well, Eisenhower, Roosevelt, Hughes. Hughes, when he was president, he stayed with the Hansons in what is known as the White House, just over here, you know? The White House building, do you know what that building is?
Yes.
Well, that was the president's home. And they tell the story about, he was a big man, some 300 and some pounds, you know, and he took a bath and they got the water too high and the water flowed out over the bathtub and started come running down the steps. Now, the president's wife told me that.
The president of the United States?
No, the president of that college's wife told me, but the president of the United States took this bath and got the tub too full and the water came over the edges and ran out down the steps.
What was his name again?
Hughes? Howard.
No, it wasn't Howard Hughes.
Not Howard Hughes.
A very important man.
Not Howard Hughes.
Well, do you remember the time period when it happened?
Oh, it was in about the 19... It was before Hoover, I know.
Before Hoover?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well...
So, you know, it's a long time ago.
Yes, it was Wilson, and I can't remember.
Yeah, it's in there.
Was Garfield or McKinley?
No.
Garfield's way too far back.
A big rotund man, in a
way. I see.
But it, unfortunately for me, I used to remember names and everything very well, but now at my age, I just don't have that capacity to remember as well as I once did.
Is there something else that you might like to add about the college choir or your activities with the choir?
The college choir and the music department were my whole life on this campus. I was here for some 41 years. I learned to know students well in the organization. The momentous occasion really was climaxed in 1976, when we had a reunion of the choir. There was something like 400 students who had belonged to this organization who came back for that occasion. They came from as far away as California, Florida, Michigan, Minnesota, all over the United States to attend that occasion. It was one which was very electric, climactic, and memorable. And it was that was the way that I left Gettysburg College, and it's a memory that I will constantly keep as long as I live.
Okay, I'd like to stop the tape for a moment. Okay, back again for a moment. Could you tell me some of maybe the odd events that happened when you were on tour?
Well, I don't know about odd events, but there were some unusually fine things that happened. Let me just begin by going back. When I was a student at St. Olaf College, I toured with the St. Olaf Choir in Europe, and we sang at the Kaiserkirche in Berlin, Germany. It was a church attended by the Kaiser. Now, 1930, Germany was fomenting because they were afraid of communism. But we sang in this large church. And afterwards, I remember the people coming up to us afterwards and saying, "Why don't you Americans do something? We've got problems. We are in trouble. And America should help us out." Well, as a student, I couldn't respond to that. However, the war came, and this church was bombed. The whole main part of it was bombed, and now just stands just a portion of the tower. However, in 1963, I returned to Germany with my own choir. We didn't sing in that bombed-out church, naturally, but we sang in the new church, which was right close to it, and which was a dream of mine to return someday to sing in that wonderful city of Berlin and near that church where I once sang as a student in the St. Olaf Choir. The other thing I want to relate is that in 1972, we made a tour of Europe, and one of the places we are asked to sing was in Venice, Italy, and we sang in the old Catholic church, the old Catholic cathedral. It was St. Mark's Cathedral. And when we went there, I asked the man in charge, who was a bishop or a monsignor, I guess, and what we should sing. He said, "Well," he said, "so long as it's sacred, sacrum," he said. "Fine," I said, "it's all right." And we sang at a high mass, believe it or not. Now, that is the only time that we've been asked to sing really in a Catholic church. Never were we ever asked to do so in our own country. But it takes the people over there who are far more liberal in their thinking than we are. We sometimes think that we are so liberal, but in many places in Europe, they're far more liberal on many of these questions than we are.
Do you have a memorable event or a story, a happy story, that you would like to tell?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
When we were going to the city, I mean, to the country of Japan on our tour in 1967, there were two Japanese guides that were assigned to us. You must remember that over there, guiding is under the government, and those who are guides must take a very stringent examination, and then they are assigned. They were not too happy about being assigned to an American organization. They didn't like to handle American groups. I guess in many instances, the American groups were just unruly. They were sarcastic and also forthright in criticisms that they had to deal with them. However, we came, and after we were there a week, the whole atmosphere had changed with these two, and they were very, very complimentary of our group. That is the first part of it. After we returned to the United States, the president of the college got a letter from a lady who was a librarian from New York who traveled with a group in Japan. She had the same two guides that we had had. And this lady wrote to the president to tell him that the two guides just couldn't stop talking about what a fine group of Americans that they had in this Gettysburg College Choir. And I have this letter in one of my files.
That's great. That really sounds neat. Just before we end, and there's only a minute or two left on the tape, I was interested in the story you were telling about the important people that came to Gettysburg as speakers or for graduation.
Yeah.
Could we talk a little more about that?
Yeah, but I forget the names, you know, of so many of these people.
Okay.
I remember Eisenhower was the speaker at one of them, and he spoke down at the Majestic Theater, which didn't have any place to go, so he spoke in the Majestic Theater. I just cannot bring to the foreground some of the names of these people, for instance, right now.
Very fine. Thank you very much for your
You're
time,
welcome.
And you've been very patient with me.
And I hope that it's worthwhile.
I feel it will be. Thank
Good.
You very much.
Good.